Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know, the leaves on the trees are falling to the sun.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you after a great football weekend, depending on who you bet on. But, of course, today, or actually last night, but started the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, and happy, healthy, prosperous New Year to all those of you who celebrate. It's obviously an important time, but it will also be a time that, from the market standpoint, it will be a slower couple of days here, with also Germany and China closed, but always around Rosh Hashanah is the slower markets, as many of the traders are Jewish and take time off. And we want to again wish you all a happy, sweet, prosperous New Year. But as we look, it's not so prosperous for Deutsche Bank. But more importantly than Deutsche Bank is the idiots that continue to state on TV, through the media, through the political beings, through the advisors, that Deutsche Bank and Lehman are not the same. And, well, of course, I will agree. They are not the same. One is named Deutsche. The other was named Lehman. However, let's evaluate and look at the picture. The picture is very simple and very clear. Okay? If we turn the clocks back to 2008, Lehman Brothers was over-leveraged, and we didn't have the big financial bailout system at 0% interest and all the other things that go on or that have went on since that period of time. So in that respect, they are not the same. However, okay, they have the same characteristics and the same flaws, and you can throw Bear Stearns in there and many of the others, which is they are over-leveraged. They are using derivative products to create monster positions, and it's a great position to be in when you have really no risk, because what's the risk going to be? They are certainly in the too-big-to-fail camp. So somebody will bail them out. It'll most likely be the German central banks or Germany itself. But already, because of the potential trouble, the United States justice system has already rumored to talk about reducing the fine that they have to pay. So they are getting bailed out. And the bigger problem from all that is that they are getting bailed out with our money. Okay, and that is always the thing that I find to be irritating and why I think the Fed is a bunch of idiots. Okay, because we continue to bail out the too big to fail. And what does that do for us? It does nothing. We get to pay for it. They get to gamble and fire up. They get to do all the things that you and I would love to do. Is, hell, wouldn't you like to take a shot to make $1 billion? And not have the risk if it's wrong, because you know you're too big to fail and that somebody's going to be there to bail you out? Is that not one of the dumbest things ever, that we can have institutions that they should be institutionalized along with the Federal Reserve, okay, that will take big shots, okay, use enormous leverage, because they know that if they bust, they're going to get bailed out. Now, what sense does that make? What sense does it make that anything can be too big to fail? What sense does it make that we cannot see the forest through the trees. I mean, Lehman, Deutsche Bank, Bear Stearns are the exact same thing. They're just at different times and there's different regulations, but the same things apply. Is they're too big to fail. So somebody's going to step up. Now, if you go back to 2008 again, you heard Jim Cramer from Mad Money or whatever his show's name is. It was Bear Stearns. No way. They're not going out of business. Let me see if I can read the exact quote. Okay. Because they are telling you that, you know, hey, it's okay because we're going to let the Fed bail you out. And you know, is it really what we want to do? Is that really where we want to be to have the Federal Reserve bailing out everybody? Because all they're doing is printing money, which comes to us. But Jim Cramer said, no, no, no. Bear Stearns is fine. Do not take your money out. Excuse me. Bear Stearns is not in trouble. If anything, they're more likely to be taken over. Don't move your money from Bear. That's just being silly. Don't be silly. Well, of course, when Jamie Dimon, another too big to fail institution from JP Morgan, over the weekend stole Bear Stearns for a dollar a share or whatever it was and took in all that money and then let Lehman Brothers go bust, sounds to me like a little impropriety there. And again, I'm not accusing. I'm just voicing my opinion on my radio show. Okay, but this is not something new. This happens all the time. Okay, and when we continue to ignore the problem, and the problem is, okay, that they're in trouble. The problem is that they're over leveraged. The problem is that we are going to get to pay for it. That is the problem. Now, listen, they can go out of business all they want. I could care less. I wish they'd have let the banks go out of business in 2008. Because all we've done now is created a bigger mess, and pretty soon everybody's going to be too big to fail. And you know what's going to happen? They're all going to fail. Because you cannot print into oblivion. At some point, there has to be a line drawn in the sand. And I personally believe that the Fed is out of bullets. I believe that they don't have much choice left, which is why they're using the Justice Department, in this case, to help Deutsche Bank. Now, I can give a rat's ass about Deutsche Bank or anybody else. You know what? I care about you. I care about me. I care about us. Hell with the big banks who create magic money out of thin air and let these things continue to happen, okay? And don't use the proper diligence to manage and work on their things. Why? Because why should they? I mean, would you? I wouldn't. I mean, if they gave me a free run or a free roll to steal as much as I could, and if it worked, great. I just keep the money. If it didn't work, oh well, I'll get bailed out. Isn't that nice? Okay, so we get bailed out or we make the money. That's a pretty good spot to be in, other than the jail where they should be, or in bankruptcy court. And that always becomes the bigger issue to me. Is that we continue to allow this, but more importantly, okay, we've got too many idiots out there saying, well, this time is different. It ain't different, okay? It is not different. It may not be the exact same, but it has the characteristics, and the characteristics are you should be worried and thinking about it because eventually there's going to be a problem. And these are problems that continue to pop up and don't go away, and you can't sweep them under the carpet. You can't ignore them. They are going to be a much bigger, bigger problem at some point. And the issue here is to get rid of them now and let's move on and let's take the bullet now. Let's take the punishment now because we ain't getting any better and everything else sucks around here. So let's clean it up and move on and become the strong America that we were. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure when you miss an episode, you go to libertytalk.fm. Download The Bubba Show. Download The Sporting Edge. And in the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm going to step out for a break and be right back at the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Mostly an eight. Welcome back to The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Jane King Lila Max Media, The Ka-Ching Report, Educational Podcast, and everything else. What's up, Jane?
Hey, okay. Just, you know, it's so funny. We talk, you know, and a week goes by, and it's like we have so much to talk about. I mean, so many things have been happening. It's amazing how this world works.
It is amazing. And, you know, I guess the first question is, what did you think of the debate? What were your opinions? What was your takeaway? I mean, obviously, depending on what channel you watched, it was like two completely different debates based on those. But what was your opinion?
Well, I did watch the whole debate and then even some of the commentary afterwards. So I go back to my thing without like hearing any of the commentary. And I remember what I thought that night. And you know, first of all, I mean, just, you know, if there's one thing Hillary Clinton is good at, she's good at debates. And she always has been. She's obviously prepared, knows a lot about a lot of subjects, has concise answers. I mean, she really debates well. I mean, I don't know about her decision-making. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, her managerial style, I don't know if I would endorse that. But she's a good debater. And I think, you know, I think she outperformed Trump. I mean, I think he went into it, I think, a little bit thinking, well, I know enough about this stuff, and I've been out speaking, and I've talked to enough people that I can get through this. But it's a totally different format. I mean, you have to, in a debate, like, focus. You can't repeat yourself. You have to stay on point. She has the advantage, of course, being Secretary of State. I mean, she lived through a lot of these subjects that they were talking about, so she can talk about them, because there's so much when you've experienced something, it's so much easier to talk about. But I think he has to get more focused and get his answers more concise. And, you know, he makes some great points, and he's got some great points, and he just needs to get those front and center out there and not linger with some of the stupid stuff that we've been talking about since the debate, like this Miss Universe thing. And I'm Rosie O'Donnell. I'm like, stop. I mean, here we are like 2 months from the election, and we really need to get, you know, focused and serious about what you're going to do. So I hope he does better the next time around.
Well, I think first of all, you know, Hillary Clinton put that stuff on the table, so he had to talk about it, right? I mean, he couldn't control himself and not answer, so he answered about Rosie O'Donnell.
No, but he doesn't talk about it for 3 days afterwards.
No, I don't disagree with that at all. I think that you're right. Now, I think that his problem, my opinion, was he wasn't Donald Trump at the debate. He was trying to be a calmer, not go after your in your face Donald Trump. And let's face it, one of the things that's made him successful was going at these candidates and not being very passive. And I thought he was fairly passive on the debate, and that he didn't really get to any of his points because he let her put her off target. I called it a draw. But I mean, I could see where somebody could think that she won, and you know, obviously a lot of people are making a case that he won. But at the end of the day, I thought it was a rather bland debate, and she is good at it. I mean, you know, she's like Ted Cruz on that side. I mean, you know, they're professional. Mm-hmm. They're professional debaters. They're professionally.
She's always been
educated
at debates. I mean, she is a preparer. She does her homework. That doesn't mean, like I said, her gut instincts about decision-making. I mean, and I think we've seen that as her Secretary of State. I don't think her gut decision-making instincts were very good. But when you're in front of 85 million people, you're never going to get a larger audience than that. I mean, that's almost Super Bowl numbers. And, you know, I hope his people, you know, Kelly Conway and those guys are telling him this is a little bit different than giving a speech, you know, in Ohio to 10,000 people. You have a minute and a half to kind of answer something. You need to stick to it. You can't get sidetracked. You know, if she brings up something, which she will, I mean, her people are, you know, they're pros. They do this, dig up this research. You can't totally expect that's going to happen. And, you know, he just needs to address it quickly and move on to something he wants to talk about and not let some of that stuff linger and stay in the news. So I think the next one will be much better. But I think, you know, I think she was more coherent and just kind of seemed more organized.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, we could obviously talk at that ad nauseum, and, you know, it's going to be, I want to see if he steps up and becomes who he really is instead of who he's really not. And, you know, because that's what I want to see. And that's the only chance I think he's got is to put her down. But we'll see from there. Now, we go from Hillary Clinton and the debate to let's go to a stump from Wells Fargo. I mean, now, I get the whole thing. We know the facts are clear. Okay, they did something wrong. I'm going to say that he might have had some knowledge of it, but didn't. I mean, look, he has 200,000 employees. I don't think he's watching the day to day. Obviously, companies make unbelievable sales demands on their employees, and employees are smart enough to figure out how to skate the system. So really the shareholders got ripped off, and they got really stolen from. But again, I don't agree with it's wrong, and that's the whole thing. But I don't like the way that it happened on the Hill, and that you have a bunch of people asking questions that they have no idea what they're talking about, and they're wasting all this time. And one of the guys said, well, how did you get here today? You know, oh, I flew Virgin America. Well, I mean, what do I care how we got there? I mean, certainly the guy makes $41 million a year. He can afford to come in a private jet if he chooses to.
Right. Well, and of course, they're thinking back to the auto bailout and all that, you know, auto executives flew in their private jets to Washington to ask for bailout money. But you know, it kind of made sense to me, but I'm a business person. I was like, look, I mean, if you're trying to turn around the company, you know, you got to get it in and out fast. I mean, you can't be, you know, waiting and flying coach, but anyway, it just didn't, the optics were terrible for that whole auto thing. Well, you know, now there's stories about the board, and the board is upset with him. And once your board is upset with you, you know, his days may be numbered. It's just, you know, and right. I mean, it's a sales thing, and it just, this happens a lot. I mean, and this is one of those things, like, I mean, I'm a believer in capitalism. I think it's lifted people out of poverty. It's given us amazing products and services, and it's good for everybody. But this is one of those things where, I mean, look, I mean, people are human. I mean, they're just not going to, and you got to have the product. You got to have the product there that is compelling enough to match your sales, or people are going to do things like they did. And so I think, you know, that's where he failed as an executive, was that, you know, he didn't realize what he was asking his people to do, and didn't give them the tools to be able to achieve that.
And I agree. Look, he definitely did not do the right thing. I just don't know that he had as much knowledge. But what I really don't like is, because it's an election year, that these guys went, you know, wild on this guy. And listen, he deserved every bit of it. Okay, but it's just, I think that's the wrong venue. And the other big problem, in my opinion, is this guy's never going to jail. So, you know, why are we making an ordeal? Let him pay the fine. Move on. Now, if you go to jail, which he deserves to go to jail. I mean, if you or I did that, we'd be going to jail, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and can you imagine, like, I mean, Wells Fargo, if you're, you know, 10 days late on a credit card payment, I mean, they're going to be calling you every day and trying to get their money. I mean, you know, these are not, like, compassionate places. Another question, too, is these senators and the congressmen and women, how many of them got money from Wells Fargo as they were raising money? So I think, you know, it's a vicious circle, Todd, you know?
No, I know. Again, I just, you know what, it's so much easier just to do things the right way, okay? Yeah. Instead of trying to create this big BS deal, okay? Again, he's wrong. He should go to jail. You're not going to go to jail. Take the fine, shut up, and let's move on, because all this grilling is not doing anybody any good. And it's just bringing to the point that we know that banks are in trouble all the time, because when you have the advantage of knowing that the Fed is going to bail you out, you can afford to step up with more risk, just like we see now Deutsche Bank in Germany. Now, you know, we know they're going to get bailed out if there's really a problem. I mean, because that's just the way it is. Once we made the decision in 08 to make these bailouts, there is no turning back now. But in the meantime, it has caused a little bit of rift down the street. And what are your thoughts there? I mean, I think they're doing the same thing they did last time. They've got a lot of derivative products, and they're doing what they're not supposed to be doing. But, of course, they'll get bailed out anyway. So what difference does it make?
Well, it's funny. I just watched The Big Short for the first time. I mean, what's been up for a year now? I'm just now getting around to watching it. So all this is fresh in my mind about what was going on and just how unbelievable it was. And, I mean, here we go again. And, you know, the beginning of the whole movie, I don't know if you've seen it, Todd, is about, like, how banking used to be boring. And you just loan people money. And, you know, you just look at somebody's credit. You know, you weren't in derivatives. You weren't in trading and prop trading and stuff like that. And that's the stuff that, you know, got us into trouble. And, you know, here we go again. And it's rippling the markets. I don't think this is a Lehman moment. But Deutsche Bank's a big bank. And, you know, it's going to cause some problems, and it certainly doesn't, you know, help with the public trust, which just still hates the banks, as we've seen with Wells Fargo.
Jane King, I will leave you with this thought as you get ready to go to Denver and do some work with your TV stations and your podcasts and your finances and teaching children. I'll leave you with this thought, though, before we go, and that is, I keep hearing it's not a Lehman moment. but it's not a Lehman moment. It's a Deutsche Bank moment. But we all heard everybody say that Lehman wasn't in trouble and Bear Stearns wasn't in trouble. And every collapse ever since, going back to 1929, the high tide of prosperity will carry us through, Secretary Andrew Mellon. In the meantime, Jane King, thanks as always. It's always great to have you on, and have a great trip in to Denver.
Thanks.
And that was our friend Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report. Make sure you check her out. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. LibertyTalk.fm will get you the download of The Sporting Edge, as well as The Bubba Show, or The Bubba Show and The Sporting Edge. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be right back.
Margie said, Roy, you
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, and it's time for Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com, and does great research for here us at The Bubba Show, and, of course, is on top of the markets, and even when they struggle, he still has the right feel and explains it properly. What do you say, Matt?
I'm doing okay. How about you, Todd?
No, I mean, I find that the market's a little bit challenging. I see things, and they're really just stuck in this big, wide sweeping congestion period, and they will not break one way or the other. Now, again, you know, as a trader, from my perspective, I want them to break one way or the other because it makes making money more easier. It's more opportunities when you have movement, and when you just sit in these ranges, it makes it much more challenging. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I mean, you know, yeah, really, it's been about 3 months, no net movement. We had another choppy week last week. It's tough. I feel strongly that the highs are in for, you know, the S&P and Dow and NASDAQ, actually. But, you know, it's just when do we sell off? You know, when does that movement actually begin? So,
well, I mean,
I assume, but, you know, I could say that, you know, I've been saying that for a little while. So
you can say that till we're old and gray. But right. To your credit, you did say about the bonds, you know, they didn't go right down, but they certainly were at the high when you called them. And again, unfortunately, the markets don't send Matt or me a telegram saying that they're ready to do it today. But being set up and being prepared for the correct opportunity is always a very important thing about being a technical analysis and reading the charts correctly. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I agree. My methods work based on price. Not so much on time. So I'll look for a level that we'll hit and then reverse from. We can hit it and then we can sit there for a while, which is what we've done. So
yeah, it's been torturous as traders, and you know, it depends on how active you want to be, but you know, if you're active, it's certainly been brutal. I mean, there's been a couple some movement, but we have not really developed another long-term trend, right? I mean, basically, you know, most people, you know, and if you're a trend trader, which is what we have to mostly be when we're not on the trading floor, you need to have those trends because that's where you get the bigger success when you have a market breakout to a trend, whether it be up or down, and you can participate in a much longer move. Is that how you look at it?
Yeah, no, trends are great because you can just, you know, stick with it for a long time. You know, what I'm trying to, you know, do is find those reversal points when the trend turns the other way, you know, so you can get in as early as possible on the next trend. So that's, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it's not the easiest thing, but, you know, I think, you know, as we've been talking about this, I think we've hit our peaks. I think we're going to reverse here. I think this is going to happen relatively soon. Volatility, I've been talking about that for a long time. It bottomed in August. The S&P and Dow topped in August. Now we're just waiting on, I believe, just volatility to really kick up. You know, if you look at October, you know, and the way that option bets are being placed in the VIX, looks like volatility, you know, this month, this should be the month.
I agree. I mean, look at, you know, October, notoriously or historically, whichever way you want to look at it, has been, you know, a month that has had action. I mean, we've had obviously the biggest sell-offs in October, and certainly things are setting up. And I know you don't cover the news, but I mean, you know, the Deutsche Bank deal where, you know, the Germany didn't bail them out. Of course, the United States bailed them out because they cut down the fine. You know, that's just another sign that there's a lot of underlying weakness and that we're being artificially propped up. Now, does that information ever show up in your charts at all? The way that the news is affecting the market? And really, you know, I'm not a news guy. I'm a chart guy like you are. But does that show up in anything that you do?
It does show up. You know, certain, you know, events that are known events will show up. You know, some, you know, it's more of an obscure chart, but if you looked at the SKU chart, the SKU index chart that was implemented after 1987's crash, that was very high right before the Brexit vote, for example. So, I mean, that just tells you that there was extra risk out there, but it was a known event. You know, charts tell you about known events. They tell you about unknown events. You know, we talked about the high in dollar yen last year. We didn't, you know, there was no, as far as I know, there was no scheduled event out of the Bank of Japan. But there was an interview with Kuroda. And at that interview, he said that he thought that the yen had weakened enough. And that's when we had the reversal up at about 125 in dollar yen. So, you know, somehow the chart knew about that something was going to precipitate that move and, you know, told us.
Now, you know, we've got, you know, just obviously a lot of interference and not the true free market movement. Now, again, that doesn't affect the chart. The chart's still going to show the footprint of whatever that footprint happens to be. But do these kind of things concern you at all? You know, that there's always somebody willing to step in to kind of bail out or make the markets, you know, operate properly. You know, like, you know, every other day there's a Fed official. Like it seems like to me like doctors on call waiting to say something. You know, if the market's too hot, they kind of cool it down. And if it gets too cold, they kind of come and try to heat it up again. Does that concern you at all? Or does that come into any of your
problem? Well, I mean, just on a sort of a fundamental, you know, just on a basic level, you know, it's really irritating. You know, that they're just trying to manage it so much. Just let a free market be a free market. I mean, I think it's, you know, arrogant of them to think that they can control it as much as they do. But, you know, they have. I mean, you know, people respond to what they say all the time. It's amazing. You know, I also think there's probably something else going on, you know, underneath the surface that, you know, some of their member banks are probably, you know, trying to, you know, move markets. You know, they're probably in there potentially moving markets the way they like. They're all talking to each other. You know, they all know what the you know, announcements are going to be and that sort of thing. So I think they're working together.
And I agree with that. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed about the way we have this action now, because, again, you mentioned the key word, which is free markets. And, you know, you're not, I mean, they're free, but they're not letting the true price discover And what you and I both know one thing for sure. Price discovery, the model goes on in every walk of life. You know, you go to dinner, you go to a restaurant, you know, you go if the price is what you think is fair, you'll pay the price and the restaurant's gonna sell it at that price. You know, kids in grade school, they trade a sandwich for a yogurt or whatever. I mean, everything is price discovery. And why does the Federal Reserve, I know this is out of your wheelhouse a little bit, but why does the Federal Reserve think that they need to manipulate price when markets will price assets themselves, and that's a much purer and better way to go?
I think, you know, personally, I think they're worried that if they let the free market price interest rates, if they let the, you know, and then debt, that it would get out of control very quickly. I think rates would go a lot higher real fast. I think a lot of debts would implode. I think our system is so, you know, we were supposed to start delevering after 2008. The way the system's built, it can't ever delever. If we don't constantly have, you know, modest inflation, we don't, at least, you know, I could go on and on that topic about, you know, how they control the money supply and so forth. But if they were just to let the market do its own thing, I think it would get real violent real quick.
But I mean, don't you think? I mean, you're a chartist. You've been doing it for, you know, for many, many, many years. I mean, don't you think that's really what the market really needs to really sort itself out, is to, if there's some violence to happen? You know, for example, in 2008, I would have let the banks that couldn't make it collapse. I mean, you know, look, we can't. I'm tired of paying taxes for everybody else, right?
Absolutely. Let the system clear. You know, I mean, you know, if banks are going to fail, let them fail. It would be terrible. You will feel like the world's ending, I would think, in the very short term. But, you know, afterward, you know, it will be a big reset. And then you can actually have a strong, you know, I think you could still have a very strong recovery after something like that. It wouldn't go, you know, but instead, you know, it's kind of like what the Japanese did. They try to manipulate the system. They never got, you know, a strong recovery. And look what they're doing today. I think, we're just going down that same path.
Right, and that's what I mean. I mean, you know, again, I know you're not, you know, triply fundamental guy. You're more of the charts. But at the end of the day, we need the markets to just be the markets and trade the way that they're supposed to trade, which is, means that, you know, free market and price discovery is what our system was built on. And that's what we do. And when you take that away and you manipulate, what you're really doing is you're setting up the failure for much longer. And I think the longer that they continue to do this, the bigger chance for the bigger failure. What do you think?
It will be much bigger. It'll be a much bigger problem. You know, they're just magnifying it. So there's, you know, putting leverage on leverage. You know, they're never letting the system clear. It's just when it does, it's going to be that much more violent, and it'll hurt more people. You know, and one other thing that's sort of, you know, really frustrating about what they're doing is they're really trying to pick winners and losers. You know, they're deciding who, you know, whether savers, you know, savers are obviously the losers because they can earn no interest. And, you know, risk takers, you know, are the winners, you know, the ones that are, you know, it really isn't fair. And, you know, they should just stay out of it. But
they're not. And I get that. This is Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. Probably in the top 2% of analysts in the country from reading charts, and we love to have him on every week. We're going to step by here for a break. This is the Bubba Show. Make sure you go to LibertyTalk.fm and download the show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge. We're going to stop by for a break. Be back with more from Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com, right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com, and one of the top analysts, chart readers, CMTs in the country, and he's here for us each and every week. And Matt, you know, I know that you're a gold bug, but you do believe that gold has a little bit more downside action coming to it. And I know we've been in this, you know, new, a little bit higher consolidation pattern over the last couple of months. But I know I want you to tell us about the gold special that you're offering and how the listeners can get involved with you.
Okay, great. Yeah, you know, I am a gold bug and a silver bug. But I don't think that we had a target level lower in gold than where we bought in December. So, you know, we don't feel that the pattern's complete to the downside. We think we're going to get another big leg to the downside in gold. we shouldn't go much higher than 1400, and then we should have a very steep sell-off. So what we want to do is when we do hit the bottom in gold, we're going to send out a text and an email to our gold bottom call subscribers, and to sign up for that, it's free. And then when we send out that text and email alert, we have to be absolutely right about it. We have to be within 3% of the actual bottom with our call, and then we have to have a rally of 20% from the low that we call. And if that happens, then we'll charge $49. If we're wrong, it's free.
And it won't be free because we're going to get there. Because you know, I've seen enough of the stuff, and I'm convinced you're right that we're going higher. I know you think it's going significantly lower from here before it does go up, actually bounce. But what do you think of gold here now? And I guess basically, I think we have to really talk about it and compare it to the dollar at this moment, because I think everything is really trading the dollar right now versus anything else. What are you seeing?
Yeah, well, in relation to the dollar, I'm kind of neutral right now on the dollar. We're not, from what I can tell, we're not on a strong support. You know, we obviously had some lows in the 93 to 94 range. I think we're probably going to go back there before we get another big bounce. There's another area which is significantly lower, 90 to 91. From one of those two levels, we're going to get a big rally, and then I think we're going to go back above 100. I just don't think that in the very short term that it's ready to go just yet to the upside.
Yeah, and again, I it's so hard to read and understand here. And again, that's your deal, that's your job. I mean, but I look at it from my perspective. I go, you know, there's, the commodities, you know, which are very, very dollar sensitive, they seem to be, you know, pricing in a much higher dollar, even though the dollar isn't higher right now. But just looking at the overall commodity space, we see this happen, and that's what I'm looking at. But of course, on the other side of that coin is oil, which, you know, I thought it was great that OPEC did what they did, and that we got that big spike, because I think that created another great selling opportunity in oil. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Well, first, I mean, fundamentals, like you say, aren't my main thing, but I do think oil is in secular decline. But that aside, I could be right, I could be wrong about that. I do think we have a major resistance level, or approximately, you know, just under 50, around 49, 70, and slowly declining. We also have another level up at 53, which is much stronger. And that's declining as well. Actually, that's 53.50 approximately, and that's declining as well. So if, you know, the longer it takes to get there, it's about, say, 10 cents per week, 20 cents per week. Take off those targets. It's another great selling opportunity. I think we get a little bit more to the upside first, and then we're actually going to think about selling calls against it. So maybe call spreads, but we're already short, and we got short one day off the high in August, and we're still looking for more downside. Downside, I think, could go quite a bit lower, actually, even lower than our initial target is around 43, which we've already come close to. I think it's eventually going to break that level. I think we'll go down into the mid to low 30s.
I'm looking for 40, maybe 39. But again, we're on the same track, basically. You know, just the question of the level, and your stuff is a little bit more scientific than what I'm doing. I mean, I read a chart, just not quite the same way as you do with the trailing lines and all other stuff. But so when you look at it and you see this, and then we look at the grain markets, which are basically slightly higher but pretty much flat, and they just seem to be pretty much across the board and really just a big long consolidation pattern. What are you seeing in the grain markets?
I've been modestly bullish of wheat, for a long time. I think wheat is probably okay relative to corn and soybeans. But, my wheat chart is probably the more complex of the three, the most complex of the three. Corn and soybeans, I think there's another leg to the downside. And, we got – but here's how we'll know if we're going to be wrong. We actually shorted corn at about 334 this past week, and we are going to stop out if we go above 345. If we go above 345, which we've talked about, you know, as a level for a couple of weeks, then I think, you know, the grains can get some momentum going to the upside. Otherwise, I think if we can't, you know, I'll be short here and then cover and potentially go long above 345. But until that happens, I think there's probably another leg to the downside, another fairly substantial one.
Okay. I mean, and some are calling for that. I don't see that. I mean, you know, again, that's what makes a market. You know, I see that, you know, right now probably, you know, 325, 330 to 345, which is my number on the upside as well. But if we can get through that 345, I think that you could see, you know, I don't say a substantial move, but a bigger move. And I think we can, you know, probably go to 360 after 345. But I'm more bullish than you are on this space in general. And I think soybean just continue to stay in that about 60 or 70 cent range, which is like 940 to 10 bucks. And I don't see him getting too carried away one way or the other. But, you know, overall, you know, we are, you know, reaching, you know, from a fundamental standpoint, harvest time and, you know, what's going on. So we'll see. And here, and then, of course, last week you told us you felt that the hog markets were going to get waxed, and of course they did, much to my chagrin. I need the Heimlich maneuver to get off the ones I'm choking on that I own. But what's your take here? Do they go far enough lower now, or are they got more room to go?
Yeah, we in hogs we have a target in December futures at 42.50 approximately. So I think, you know, there will be, that will at least be a bounce level. It could be a major bottom. You know, the problem is I look at two different types of charts. I look at futures charts and I look at spot index charts. And they're not exactly saying the same thing. The spot index charts has the same level as a bounce, but it says we're going to have a much larger leg later to the downside. It could go either way on that. But long story short, we're looking for 42.50 in the next week or so, which is only about, you know, 2 to 3% lower in hogs, and then I think we get a pretty good rally. With cattle, we're looking at about 95 as our low target in cattle, in December cattle. So I think we're setting up for a pretty good, at least a good bounce, if not a major rally.
Okay, so yeah, I think we're going to get a bounce too. And the question is, you know, one of the things I look at a lot is how they open and close. And, you know, if they, you know, that basically we've been in a pattern that, you know, they open flat or a little higher, and every day the sellers come in and wax them because they open a little bit flat or higher. And that is usually a good sign. And what we really need to see is, I think, one more good flush out to the downside. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think a little more flush to the downside, give everybody out. The commercials are starting to get long. The banks are starting to buy. I think this is what they, you know, they were heavily, heavily short, and the hogs up near the highs, and, you know, they have obviously gotten their profits in, and now I think they're reversing to the other side. So, yeah, I think this next flush will be it. At least for a bounce.
All right. Well, you got about 20 seconds. Give us the words of wisdom for the upcoming week and what you're seeing quickly.
Well, you know, the main thing is I think volatility is about ready to really spike up. We've already seen a few minor spikes. I think, you know, this month we'll see, and probably starting this week we'll start seeing a more sustained rally in volatility.
And that's the words from Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. Always a pleasure to have you on, Matt. Thank you so much.
It's always great to be here.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, with Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. And make sure you check out his Gold Call as well as LibertyTalk.fm, so you can download the Daily Show as well as the Sporting Edge. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same station. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you later.
Let this old world.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.